It's 7 o'clock in the east, 4 p.m. in the west, and 11:45 somewhere if you're where it's 11:45. Welcome to the third annual Autoline Detroit live from Woodward Dream Cruise in Royal Oak, Michigan. I'm Jim Hall, your announcer for the entire evening and guest for part of it. Your hosts, John McElroy and Peter DeLorenzo, are here along with, I think, my evil twin brother, but we can only hope not. We'll explain that later. Before we forget the fantastic surroundings here of the Woodward Dream Cruise, we have to thank all of our sponsors that have made this this possible. And we're going to start with our signature sponsor, Mopar, Authentic Performance. Bosch, invented for life. Bridgestone, for drivers who want to get the most out of their cars, it's Bridgestone or nothing. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze, get used to more. Hyundai, experience the 2012 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com. P2R Associates, perception to reality. And let's not forget the technology that's bringing you this show right now, LiveU, Portable Uplink Solutions. Go live anywhere, anytime. And now here are the hosts of Autoline Live at the Woodward Dream Cruise, John McElroy and Peter DeLorenzo. Gentlemen.
Hey, thanks for joining us, folks. And Peter, great having you here, man, at an awesome event.
Great to be here, John. It's the biggest Run What You Brung car show in the world.
This thing's been going for how long now? About 15 years?
Yeah, about 15 years. And, you know, some locals get tired of it, but really it's the coolest event you can imagine. And if you haven't experienced it, you need to come out and see it once.
Listen, for the locals who, you know, complain about this thing, too bad.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one thing that's just awesome in the Detroit area. There's going to be about a million people here on Saturday all week long. And, in fact, Peter, you had the great line. They shouldn't just call it Dream Cruise Day.
Yeah. Let's make it Dream Cruise Week and be realistic about it because, you know, we have people coming in the weekend before and they're running up and down Woodward all week. And the merchants benefit from it, so let's call it Dream Cruise Week.
Fills up the hotels, fills up all the restaurants. You know, as I was saying, over a million people here on Saturday, probably about 1.5 million all week long. And roughly, I mean, the count is at least 30,000 classic cars. We'll go up and down Woodward. We'll see a bunch of them tonight. It's just a really cool event.
Yeah, and, you know, the grassroots thing about this event, it sort of started out of nothing, and it just became this gathering that built up over the years, and people kept coming and kept coming, and they'd come and tell their friends, and they tell their friends, and here we are. Now it's the signature event of the Motor City.
Yeah, talking about Run What You Brung. Three of my classics over the years was a chopped and narrowed school bus. They didn't shorten it. It's this big, long thing that just looked crazy. Also saw, I think it was 2 years ago, an Army half-track, World War II-era Army half-track with a 50-caliber machine gun on the back. And then one time, too, I saw a 1914 or 13 Mercer raceabout. I mean, literally a museum piece. I don't know why they would bring it out on the road here. And you'll see tonight, there's a bunch of minivans and pickups and other mundane stuff that I think should be banned for the whole Dream Cruise.
Well, there's always the traveling salesman who never got the memo, and he's driving down Woodward trying to find his hotel, and he's wondering what happened because he's surrounded by big blocks and weird stuff, and he ends up enjoying it, though. Everybody does.
Yeah, I especially enjoy it. I mean, it can get pretty crazy here. On Saturday, this place becomes almost a parking lot. You can't believe how much traffic is here. That's why being out here on a Thursday night, it's actually better. There's a higher preponderance of classic cars here.
Yeah, well, actually, the run-up to the day itself is much better because the Dream Cruise itself is a parking lot, stop and go. But during the week, you can get, you actually see the cars moving, and now it's become this event. Every night, they're out.
One thing that I always like, too, is standing about a block off Woodward in the evening and just closing my eyes just to hear the sound because it's awesome. You've got anything and everything running here. Some of it's super loud, but it's just the overall rumble in the background is something to behold.
Well, just hearing a big block Chevy or a Hemi at about 11 at night just... You can hear it. You can hear it all over the town, you know, if you have your windows open. It's very cool. Very cool. It's like big block city for a week.
the police here are really frown on anybody really lighting them up, but it's been known to happen. I think one of the cars I was driving, my foot slipped, and I really did quite the burnout, but they sort of frown on that thing. But that's one of the other good news things about the Dream Cruise is you get a million people here, and everybody's in the greatest of moods. I mean, everyone's super friendly. I'm not aware of any really big problems they've ever had here.
No, they've only had a couple incidents. I mean, the Royal Oak Police, we are in Royal Oak. This is the epicenter of the cruise. We're at 13 Mile and Woodward Avenue. And isn't Woodward the oldest paved street in the United States? Is that what the deal is?
Well, that's what we here in Detroit claim. I think Cleveland might have some other claim, but yeah, we'll stick with Woodward being it.
And so we're at the epicenter, and ironically, the Royal Oak Police Department has very much a love-hate relationship with the event. So they're the ones who will write you the hard ticket, and you know, but you know, it's kind of a standoff, and but generally you're right, the mood is great, people feel good, and what's not to like, you know?
Well, I think one of the reasons why it's so good is it's really been a grassroots effort, and it's really people just getting back to their roots. Back in the 60s especially, this was a drag strip.
Yeah, now Woodward Avenue in the 60s was legendary, and the factories would come out here and use Woodward to test out experimental stuff for real. You'd see highly modified prototypes from the factory, and it was just par for the course. I mean, that's what went on. And there was, you know, there was posturing down south here. Then they'd go up north where it was dark and run. And then they'd agree the real serious stuff would go somewhere else out, maybe on 75. But Woodward is where it was happening every weekend.
And it was the social scene. It wasn't just drag racing going on. It was the whole cruising thing, going to hamburger stands and whatnot with your date. And
yeah, well, there wasn't the internet or any of that stuff, so people had to actually drive somewhere and get out of their cars and talk to each other, which is an amazing concept in this day and age, but that's what we did.
Imagine that, talking to people. Hey, we got Scotty Burgess here from the Detroit News. Come on in here, Scotty.
How are you? It's good to be here.
Boy, does that sound canned. Did they write that script for you?
Chip told me to say that exactly, just like that.
So we're waxing nostalgic about the Woodward Dream Cruise here and, you know, the whole cruising scene on Woodward. What's it to you?
Well, it's a lot different. I haven't been here nearly as long, so the cruise has always been here. Right now is a really good time. I actually like the weeknights before Saturday. I think that it's certainly a lot more fun. You can move around, and come Saturday morning, it's just going to be packed with people. One of the things that you guys were talking about that I really thought about is the V8s. They're going away. This is the last place you're going to start seeing them. This year, Buick stopped making the Lucerne, and that's the last V8 in Buick. I don't think Buick's never had a V8 before. Lincoln getting rid of the Town Car. There's no V8s in that brand either. And that's something we're going to see more and more of, that whole lineups with no V8. And the V8 makes the Dream Cruise.
Yeah, I remember at the second oil crisis in 1978 when everyone said, well, that's the end of the V8. That's, you know, we're all going to four cylinders and it'll never happen again. I'm not so convinced that they're going to go away. Yeah, fewer of them, but I think they're going to be around for a while.
No, we'll pay for them if you want them, but I think they'll be around.
Well, when I say go away, I mean in all mainstream cars. Yeah, of course, you'll have Corvettes or things like that with V8s, and you'll have all those big, powerful cars. But for most cars, I think that they're going to be a thing of the past.
Not in the family sedans. But then, you know, you're looking at a, you know, Mustang Camaro Challenger, all with base V6s that get over 300 horsepower. I mean, it's awesome. And and still we'll get, you know, 30, 31 on the highway, miles per gallon. And
however, there's nothing like the sound of a V8, so hopefully there'll always be one if you want to pay for one.
Well, you can get an electric car and have the taped sound of a V8. They have to have a sound eventually, and so that may be one of the things that we see. But no, you're absolutely right. Just that slow RPM, that little burbling sound. I mean, it's the best thing that you can ever listen to, especially, you know, on a lot of these cars. I do wonder sometimes by Saturday, if you were to go mile by mile from 14 to 9, what is the total horsepower on the road?
Oh, it's got to be in the millions.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and all of these cars are even more than what they were when they were first built. That's for certain.
Yeah, I mean, just standing here, you'll have 700-800 horsepower V8s as a regular occurrence. No kidding either.
Well, not only that, but just a while before we went started the show, an honest-to-God dragster, there's no way it could have been street legal was here, and I don't know, that's got to have anywhere from, what, 800 to 1,000 horsepower?
Yeah, it was a full-blown pro-stock car. It was just wild.
Well, and there's also probably more deuce coupes on Woodward than were made by Ford in 1932, which is, you know, it's very surprising, but, I mean, that's one of those classic looks that people just love to drive around, And it looks like the weather's going to be nice, maybe a little hot, but it should be fun all day.
It's always hot at the Dream Cruise, and that's why you always see cars pulled over, hood up, steam coming out of the radiator. Happens every time. I know all about it myself a little too firsthand. Scotty, so are you, what, just hanging out here tonight? You doing something for the paper? What?
I've been writing some stuff for the paper. We have a blog that's right off the front page of the website on debtnews.com. And we're going to be riding around in a Camaro convertible, myself and Tom Greenwood, and writing about that. And then we just posted a video of safety tips to follow on the Dream Cruise, and it includes a really good burnout of the Camaro SS.
Cool. We should be watching some of the cars that go by here, because as we've been talking, there's been some awesome stuff that's going by, and our location's pretty good at 13 and Woodward, because there's a traffic light here, and everyone's got to line up, and here they come. And there's a Mustang first off the line, about a 65, no, maybe 65, I'd say. That's the thing, you know, when you start trying to name all the cars that are going by, you can literally get a headache, because your brain's just racing to try to keep up with all what all these things are. Oh, Maserati. And a new Mustang. And what's that, about a 69 Camaro?
69. Do we have another microphone here? Or not?
So, and here comes one of my all-time favorite cars, 59 Chevy Impala. This one happens to be a two-door Impala. Just... Oh, no. That's a 60.
Yeah, that's a 60.
Oh, my gosh. From the front, I thought it was a 59, which is my favorite. The 60 is not my favorite.
This is where you guys start to lose me. When you're, 59, no, 60. And instantly tell exactly what it is, or by the sound of, that sounds like a 61.
I used to be able to tell pretty much all the cars just by their headlight signature. Because if you ride up and down here like we did in the 60s all the time, you'd recognize car by their headlights.
I used to be able to tell cars. Of course, this is back in the day when it was largely just GM, Ford, and Chrysler. By the sound of their starter. Yeah. Not even the engine. I could tell by the starter, because Chrysler's always did that do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do kind of a noise. So... just kind of awesome car. Yeah, Chevy Nomad, custom, Model T, hard body custom. A lot of cool stuff.
Firebird.
So what do you think from the class of 1986, which now qualifies for a classic license plate?
25 years old.
What vehicles deserve to be driving along Woodward Avenue from then?
You know, I have no idea.
I'm not sure that there is any that I would consider a classic from that era.
I mean, let's face it, the 80s was...
rough years.
Yeah.
Well, the 70s really were the worst.
The late 70s, when there was a 165 horsepower Z28 Camaro, as I recall, that was the pits right there.
That was the pits. And in the 80s, I don't know. Do you have a candidate?
No. It's one we were talking about at the paper. We were trying to figure out what would be something that fits in there.
Yeah. I can't think of a one.
Jim has a couple over there.
Yeah. He does? Oh, here. Jim does.
S-Rod Mustang. It was the 5-liter Mustang. They did the overdrive manual in it. It was the first time they started putting performance back in the car, so it was actually the turning point car.
When did the SVT Mustang come out?
SVT Mustang was 84.
Okay, well, I'd give an SVT Mustang the nod.
Ford were the guys that sort of turned the performance back on. And when they did that, that was the signal. It was okay for everybody else to do it. And then GM followed with port fuel on Z28. So that's a car that's significant. It's not great performance, but, you know.
Now, which Fiero was in 86? The
Fiero went out. I think they stopped production around 86. Oh, Jim says 89.
Last year of the Fiero was 88. And it was an 89, but it's never released.
Uh-huh.
That was the V6 car. That was when GM actually had the thing sorted. Then they pulled the plug on it.
Well, that's a typical GM problem of the past. You know, just when they get it pretty good, they kill it. And there's some tricked out Mustang that I'm not sure I totally like the way they tricked it out. Okay, well, look, we're going to go to one of our first commercial breaks, and I'm going to run over to the Mopar stand. We're going to show you some of the cool cars that they've got that they're exhibiting here. I'll be back in a minute, but throw it off to one of our great sponsors.
As John heads off to the Mopar set for our next segment, we're going to take a moment to spotlight a couple of our benefactors for the evening, including our signature sponsor, Mopar Authentic Performance, and Bridgestone. For drivers who want to get the most out of their cars, it's Bridgestone or nothing. What we're going to do now, we have access to a carbon fiber golf cart. And we're going to use that. We're going to drive through the parking lot of the Mopar enclosure, which right now is sort of set up mostly for, I guess, our edification. But come Saturday, this thing is going to be chock-a-block full of vehicles. Hold on just a moment. We have to sort of, this is the cool thing about live video, in that we're going to do this sort of streaming wild. It's very disconcerting, but we can make this work, I'm sure. Wow! As we go through here, there are a couple of cars I'd like to point out. And I think you'll find them entertaining, to say the least. Let me just get in here. There we go. This whole area, we're actually at the corner of, if anybody here knows Michigan, we're Woodward Avenue and 13 Mile. We're in the southeast corner, and there's a very large Mopar enclosure that is sort of a festival of Dodges and Jeeps and Chryslers, and actually some brands they don't have anymore. I'm hoping that come Saturday there'll be some DeSotos and stuff like that. We're going to go by a car that hasn't been seen very widely yet. This is the Dodge Charger SRT8, the 2012 model. Pretty spiffy, huh? And I'm hoping here that come Saturday there'll be at least one DeSoto Adventurer with Bendix electrojector fuel injection. And the interesting thing about that car is that if a Bendix fuel injected a DeSoto Adventurer runs, it's considered over restored. They didn't do that when they were new. And now, here is John. We're going to sort of hand the mic and everything else over to Mr. McElroy. Sorry you couldn't drive in the zippy carbon fiber golf cart, but
see you, John.
Zippy is not quite the idea I had in mind. But I want to introduce you right now to Tricia Hecker, who's with Mopar. And Tricia, you got to tell the audience what your title is.
Sure. It's head of marketing for the Mopar brand.
Okay. And we're standing in front of the Jeep JK8. And you got a pretty good story about this. Fill us in a little bit, and then let's walk around and point out the details.
Sure. Thanks, John. So this is a JK8 Independence, and it really goes back to the old CJ Scramblers from the 1980s, which, you know, were pickup trucks. So today, Jeep doesn't have a pickup truck in its portfolio, but we've gotten lots of feedback that they might like to have that. So in typical Mopar fashion, we come along with a kit that allows a consumer who owns the four-door Jeep Wrangler and allows them to convert this with the kit.
Well, come on, walk around with me. But first, you got to explain these headlamps. What is going on with them? They look very different.
Well, again, in Mopar fashion, this is something we're concepting. These lights are truly indestructible. And because Jeeps go off-road and are all known for their capability, we wanted a light that you could torment, you could torture, you could pound with a hammer and not hurt it. And that's really what we're testing here. So these are not on the market yet, but stay tuned. Probably more to come.
Oh, cool. Now, are these LEDs or what?
They are LEDs, and they're individually in there. So even if one were to break, the rest is still functional. That's the unique beauty of it.
Perfect for going off-road. So let's walk around the side. Obviously, this thing sits up pretty high, too. You must have done something with the suspension as well.
We have. We have added a custom front axle, and that coupled with a 4.5-inch lift kit allows us to get these 35-inch wheels and really gives it a lot more clearance to go off-road.
That is excellent. And you've got, what, some rock guards on the side, too?
Right, rock guards. Because if you're going to lift the vehicle, you got to make it a little easier to get inside, right?
And this is definitely a rock crawler. But now we get to the back of it where you can really see that it's a pickup. So walk me through a little bit of the process. How does this get converted?
So basically what we do is we start to remove the rear seats and we remove the back roof and rear panels to open it all up. And then we start to add in body panels to close off that flooring where the seats used to be, create the back bed, the side rails, cover off the interior to enclose that again. And there you go. You've got a truck bed.
Okay.
It's 50 inches by about 44, so it's not as big as a real truck, but still gives you plenty of clearance to haul.
So if I had a Wrangler and I wanted to convert it, about how long would it take and what would it cost me?
Well, a real weekend warrior could do it in a little bit of a weekend, but we really do recommend going to the dealer for this.
But if I wanted to, I could do it myself.
Of course you could, John. Only you. No, really, you absolutely could.
And the price on the kit?
The price is about $5,500, just under, about $5,495.
What's the reaction been?
We're having a hard time fulfilling demand, if I may be so. I mean, we knew that there was a demand for this, and you know, one of the things that Mopar will do is test something. We'll put it on the marketplace, and then that gives the Jeep brand some insight into how strong is it. And really, we are selling extremely well.
Okay, and come around back, because you got a few more details that you ought to point out to me here.
We do. Well, of course, we've added both front and rear bumpers for off-road. These are specifically designed to go off-road. And if you're going to go off-road, you got to protect the rear taillights, so we've got some guards on there. And then we added a spare tire just in the event something were to go wrong. So just to kind of show the versatility of the unit.
This is so cool. It really looks good, too.
Thank you. We're really excited about it. We really are. We think it's going to be great. We're already selling overseas, in fact, as well. It's been hard to contain.
That's awesome. Well, we need to get more exports going in this country. It's good to see Mopar is going to be part of that.
Thanks, John. Really appreciate it.
Okay, I think we're going to talk to you again in another minute here.
We absolutely are. I got another car for you.
Okay, but right now I got to go look at the drag pack. Thanks, Tricia. And right now we're meeting... Dale Aldo, who's standing here with the Drag Pack Mopar Dragster. Tell us all about this car, Dale.
This car is pretty unique. It's the world's first and only ready-to-race package car that has a V10 and over 512 cubic inches. It's configured for NHRA AA stock automatic class racing and currently holds the world record at 9.43 seconds.
So this is a race car. You don't take this out on the street. Unless it's the Dream Cruise, then maybe you do.
That's correct. This is race only. These are made for racers. And the centerpiece of this vehicle is obviously the Viper-based engine.
But this isn't just out of a Viper. You guys have touched this, so to speak.
It's been heavily breathed on. It's a very, very strong runner, and it makes a significant number of horsepower. NHRA rates this at 450 horsepower and 450 torque, and it gets it up and moves it quite well.
And what was the time again that you said?
9.43 seconds, and they usually turn in the 140-mile-an-hour range.
So this thing's cranking.
It is very much cranking. It has a unique set of headers that are configured for this package car. It's got a very unique scoop. The total grille area serves as a scoop, and it's a combination of a Gen 3 and a Gen 4 Viper engine. It comes with a unique racing calibration, which was developed within Chrysler. And the front suspension has a special cradle, and it has lightweight racing wheels that are Mopar logo. It has racing tires on the front. It has 9.5-inch racing slicks on the back. Unique from normal Challengers, it has a solid rear axle with a 4:11 axle ratio. So it is configured, like I say, for drag racing. It has a 2-speed transmission, which was developed specifically for this engine. And it comes with a complete fuel cell, braided lines, in-tank pump. And as you see, this is a customer's car, which is ready to be delivered.
And I assume that you've lightweighted this car as well. Talk a little bit about the front tires in that regard.
It's significantly lighter than a regular Challenger. This car runs at 3,340 pounds. The wheels are very lightweight. They're racing wheels. They're aluminum. And there has been weight taken out throughout the vehicle. We receive a body in white, which is extensively modified to receive the powertrain and the other modifications that are made to it. This vehicle here has a full roll cage, which is one of the items that is available through the option process. It has the shifter, it has the line lock, it's got a full set of gauges, it's ready to go. It's got a window net, it's got a full shoulder harness, so when you receive this car, you can basically drive it off the trailer and go racing.
Just put a little bit of fuel in the tank and nail it.
Actually comes with C12 racing fuel, so you don't even have to go to the gas station.
Just take the bow off the present and take it out on the track.
You're good to go. Don Garlitz ran this car in Gainesville, Florida for a test, and he turned 952s the second run he made.
Wow.
So it's a very capable car, a very unique car because it employs the V10 engine, and we're very excited to be involved with the program, and our sportsman racers are very excited that we are able to develop products that are this exciting for them.
Dale, what's a package like this cost?
This car, as it sits here, would be approximately $93,000 complete.
Now, complete, that's the roll cage and everything like that.
Everything you see.
But the base car itself would be what?
The base car itself is $85,000, and then there's three options. You can have a paint option. You can have the safety package, which is the roll cage, the window net, the shoulder harness. And then you can have a identity package, which is the Mopar graphics that go down the side.
How's this selling? What's been the reaction in the market?
The reaction in the market has been very, very much excitement. The Viper owners have been very, very warm towards it. A lot of the drag racers have. So it's been a success, and we're very, very happy that we were able to build this.
Dale, thanks so much for taking the time. This is an awesome car, and it's so cool to see Mopar actually selling race cars.
This is a full race car. You don't need to do anything. The car that set the national record, there were no modifications to it separate from as it was received.
Real cool. Thanks again.
Thank you.
And we got another car that we've got to go take a look at right now, too.
We'll be right back to John in the Mopar set in the second half of the show. But first, we're going to thank a couple more of our sponsors that have made the show possible tonight. First of all, we've got Bosch. Bosch, invented for life. And Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. Now, we're going to pass right back over to John. But we have to find John.
Okay, and I'm back with Tricia Hecker here, and we have got this stunning Chrysler 300. I mean, you can spot this thing a mile away. Tell us, what did you do with this car and why?
Well, we've done several things. We've been partnering with a gentleman by the name of John Fortuno.
Who we're going to talk to in just a second.
Yep. And, the Chrysler 300 has a strong history of being a performance vehicle and being a canvas for modifiers. So what we wanted to do was partner with him and really get to a West Coast concept and really show some unique differences. And I'll save some of the bodywork for John and the air compression that he wants to show you. But maybe we move to the engine and we can talk a little bit about some of the Mopar content. Because, of course, that's what Mopar is known for. So one of the first things that has kind of shocked the world, I guess, is that we dropped a 426. Six aluminum engine into this, and we added obviously strut tower braces, the cat-back exhaust, and we're really trying to show folks that, remember that history, 1955, first one to ever accomplish 300 horsepower. Here we go.
And say that again, because I think a lot of people don't realize that the Chrysler 300 was so named because it was the first car to hit 300 horses.
That's right. It was back in a day when its competitive set was maybe reaching 170, 180. So it really set a totally different standard. And in that fashion, this particular vehicle is now rated for 540 horsepower, 530 foot-pounds of torque because of that Hemi. And I should say that it was still based on the Hemi back in the 1955 range, because that was a 330 cubic inch Hemi. So, the Hemi certainly is a key asset to this vehicle.
Really cool under the hood. I mean, the outside of the car is so stunning, but it's so clean under the hood as well.
Well, absolutely. And, we've continued to work on this vehicle. We're going to bring this vehicle to SEMA. The next time you see it, we will have done some engine work to really bring all of it together. We haven't dynoed it yet. We still got a few things we want to do from a calibration and tuning perspective, but we're really excited to get it on the dyno.
Okay, let me talk with John Fortuna here, because he's done some awesome stuff with the car. John, come on in.
Hey, how are you?
Pleasure to meet you, man.
Oh, it's great to be here. It really is. It's my first time out for Woodward, so like I said...
What do you think?
It's awesome. It is totally awesome.
So just for any of our audience who don't know who you are and what you do, give them the thumbnail sketch.
My name's John Fortuna. I'm from California, Huntington Beach. I own a 2005 Chrysler 300C. I have a 2011 Chrysler 300C, which we're starting on the next generation of vehicles to really take it to another level. Focus behind this car, obviously, with the 426, is truly going to be, we're going to build a gentleman's hot rod American style.
And this is so cool, man. And let's start with the wheels, because I have never seen wheels like this. Such low-profile tires, such wide wheels. Why'd you select these?
Well, again, being from the West Coast, the front wheel is a 22 by 9 in width, and the rear is a 10.5 by 22. So that's the diameter. The tire itself is a 255-30 up front and a 295-25 series in the rear. We can get away with that all day long in Southern California.
Yeah, you can. Up here in the snow and ice, I don't know.
Yeah. As I said when I sent the car out here, these are my snow tires.
That's good. Tell us more about the car, because it's so visually arresting. I mean, the tires really set it apart, but even if you block them off, anybody would notice that this car looks different.
Yeah, and you know, it comes down to a couple different things. Aesthetically, the car itself is completely 2011 300C. What we've done from there is, obviously, we did the air suspension where the car is down low. When the car starts, it automatically raises itself up. We pretty much, if you will, de-bling the car, so we've eliminated all of the chrome. Hence, around the window trims, they're color match white. We blacked out around the mirrors, did the same thing on the door handles, and again, kept it really simple and clean. This is an exact, there is nothing done as far as body work to this car.
That's so interesting what you're saying, because of course when the 300, the recent generation first came out, they blinged that thing out, and I think that's what brought people in, out of the woodwork to go buy it. So why'd you want to de-bling it?
You know, and again, going in a whole different direction, you know, building the gentleman's hot rod, and that's been done before. So you got to figure out another way of bringing that to the table. And again, this car, the new platform, it's so distinct. When the car's laid out on the ground as you see it, and people always ask, it looks like it's on the ground. It is. It is literally on the frame right now. But you really pull out all the new body lines and the character of the car. If you look at the back, it's old school.
Let's walk back there.
Yeah, I mean, it you know, if you look in this area here, it's got all the old-school fin styles, lots of lines. You look at the back bumper, the fenders. You know, you can even see it from our angle right here.
Oh, yeah.
It dips down. It's an old-school hot rod here, you know, with today's variation of what we've got going on. The car's amazing. Yeah.
How about inside? Have you done anything there?
No. Inside is still 100% OEM. They've done an amazing job with the interior. I mean, the 8.4-inch touchscreen, it does everything for you as far as that goes. You know, the leather wrap, the real wood. So it's done really, really nice on the interior. You know, one of the other features that I love, and again, being from Southern California, that dual panoramic sunroof, but pretty much is open every day. You know, you get in the car, you fire it up, you hit the sunroof. So it's they've done a great job with that aspect.
No, I love what they've done with this car overall. I mean, I liked the prior generation to this car, but they just stepped it up that little bit more with this car, and you've taken this to the nth degree.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. You know, when you, because I park them both side by side, you can visually start to see, but that elegance, that sophistication really took it another step. You know, and what else can you say? It's American.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And that's what especially goes here at the Dream Cruise.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and you come here, and we were out yesterday checking out the area. And I did the Google. I had no clue what I was in store for when I got here. It's just awesome.
Yeah, it's a pretty unique event. And, you know, we love it here, and we hope it keeps on going forever.
Yeah.
Well, John Fortuna, thanks so much for taking the time. What a pleasure, man. Yeah.
Thank you.
I've got another car here I've got to go take a look at yet. So thanks for your time. And we're catching up with Lars here from Bosch. Lars, how are you doing?
Good seeing you.
Tell the audience exactly who you are and what your title is.
I'm Lars Ulrich, Director for Marketing at Bosch Diesel Systems.
And so here what looks like an original 1953 Corvette, but it says diesel power, clean diesel power. So explain to me what this car is and why you've brought it to the Dream Cruise.
Yeah, it actually does look like an original, but however, it's not. It's a replica. It was built from apprenticeship program in Charleston, our plant for diesel systems. And it's basically a demonstration vehicle of what clean diesel technology can do in historic cars. However, more important, what the benefits of clean diesel can do in order to launch this technology forward into the future. And that's actually where we're here right now. This technology has a little bit over 200 horsepower and 400 foot-pound of torque. And that 400 foot-pound of torque we currently utilize in order to excel and propel the market for diesel, for clean diesel in North America.
Especially 400 foot-pounds of it. Can we pop the hood on this car? We got to show the people what this thing looks like under the hood. And just like the original Corvette, it's got a dual latch system.
It does have.
Oh, so, you know, with the air cleaner and valve cover, you can't see the diesel a whole lot. But tell us a bit more about the engine.
Yeah, the engine is taken out, actually, of a BMW engine. It's a 2004 BMW engine, a little bit over 200 horsepower, 400 foot-pound of torque. And in this particular vehicle, it gets fairly good fuel economy, though this is more built for fun. And actually, we had it out in the on the Grand Prix the first time in 2008.
When the Detroit Grand Prix was here on Belle Isle.
Exactly, when it was here on Belle Isle, when the first diesels were introduced in the market. And then in 2009, when the clean diesel technology actually has launched, that's when we really made progress in respect to the take rate and consumers really taking on to this technology. Just to give you a reference point, 2009, the first clean diesel vehicles were launched. And since then, the take rate has increased from 12% to over 34%, which is the current month of May of 2011.
Yeah, that's really impressive. Diesels are starting to catch on, even in the American market.
Exactly.
But you got to tell me, what's it like driving this car?
Driving this car is just phenomenal. I mean, when you're cruising it along the highway or along the Woodward Dream Cruise, it's just basically going like on the highway and utilizing all the benefits of clean diesel. The fuel economy is there. Under cruising conditions, in some of the vehicles, you push up to 50 miles per gallon, for example, in the Jetta. And this vehicle just adds a whole lot of emotion to it because it's from 53, it is a replica, and it just has this endless torque.
So what kind of reaction do you get when you take it up and down the Dream Cruise here?
Well, actually, it's interesting because a lot of people, they're really interested now in the diesel technology, partially of the better fuel economy, but then also based on the total cost of ownership. So actually, we start to realize that people, when we're driving along, they wave at us. They say, hey, clean diesel is here to come and it's here to stay.
That's great.
So actually, people really start to understand the benefits of clean diesel. And as part of total cost of ownership, in a vehicle like that, in serious production, like for example in a Volkswagen Jetta TDI, you can get up to over 3-year period to save up to $3,600, which amounts in an amortization period or payback period in less than 18 months. And what's not more to laugh about technology like that, where you actually can save money and do a benefit to the environment.
And have a lot of fun. I'm still thinking about that 400 foot-pounds of torque.
That is a significant number. And actually, in the serious production cars, we see some very similar numbers. Like the BMW X5, which is out, the Mercedes-Benz M-Class, the 335, which is a B-turbo engine, which is out in the market, which actually has more than 400 foot-pound of torque. And that's where you really play out the benefits of clean diesel to the full extent.
Well, I think it's very clever of you to put one of these clean diesels in a replica 1953 Corvette and bring it to the Dream Cruise. That's pretty cool.
That is actually one of the things why we have done it. Actually, this was done in 2006. The project was completed in 2008. Then for the Grand Prix, and actually since the last 12 months, we at Bosch Diesel Systems here in North America have added 15 new clean diesel vehicles for the launch of 2013 timeframe, which makes us extremely bullish on clean diesel coming now into the market and really taking up its space, which the consumers are demanding.
Absolutely. Well, Lars, I think we got to go to another break here, but thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Always great to see you.
Okay, take care, man.
John's heading back, to the Woodward stage, and we're going to check out some of the cars. Peter's going to be there, and my evil twin brother will be there, so it should be amusing. But as you know, he is, in fact, evil. I'm the good one. Don't forget it. We're going to give a brief acknowledgement to our signature sponsor, Mopar, Authentic Performance, and Hyundai. Experience the 2012 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com. Now, let's all get back to Woodward in this fine speed car. You see, it starts almost seamlessly. This car is a feature that many European, expensive European cars have, and it's auto start. We come to a stop, the engine stops to conserve fuel. And I believe this has been driving for about 6 years on one tank of fuel.
Watch
with
it.
Some fuel treatment. And you see, we have living chicanes, carbon-based chicanes, almost everywhere. Oh, I see someone that I probably, well, you'll all find out, trust me. This isn't going to be pretty. Well, maybe it will, but you've got to have a pretty jaded sense of beauty. Now, there's Mazeppa again, one of the hundreds of Autoline interns. And, a cone. I don't know what that is over there. Do you guys see that thing there? It's a large vertical accumulation of cells that looks somewhat like me, but not a lot like me.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob. How are you? Did you just get here?
Yeah, just did. Good to see you. How have you been? I haven't seen you in a while.
I'm fine. You did just get here.
I did. I think so, yes.
Yes, I just got here a few moments ago. And I was stepping on the cable here.
So we have to explain to everybody. I think you mentioned that it's your brother that's here with you.
Evil twin brother.
But as you call him your spare parts brother. In fact, you call him Bob. I like using the way of saying it. It's Bob. It's spare Bob. Parts Bob.
Well, spare parts, you have to understand.
I really can't comment that at this time. He's told me that if I do, I'll be rendered into my component atoms. And
no, we'll just harvest some of the more important parts. But Bob, no, you have to understand that
my spleen hurts.
Because we're identical twins, and we're genetically identical twins, Bob is basically, well, for example, a cornea on the hoof. And I promise that if I need a cornea, after my men harvest it, I'll give it back. I'll give it back when I'm finished, when I'm done with it. No problem.
Why don't you just give me your old cornea?
Well, yeah, we could do that too. Yeah. And of course, many internal parts, like, you know, your liver. So don't drink, Bob.
Don't drink, but you drink all the time.
You'll be able to enjoy the effects of it later.
Okay, is this a world first? Is this the first time that Spare Parts Bob and Jim have been together?
In a long time, yes.
Yeah, Bob has been living sort of on his private continent. And this is because if we stand within a certain distance of each other, we will create a vibration that will destroy your universe, and it will annihilate it instantaneously, and our own universe will be in its place, where things are basically as they are here, except the air...
They're better.
Well, the air smells nicer, the temperature's always 68 around the world, and most importantly, every day is Dream Cruise.
Yeah. Then we definitely have to keep you apart.
Make a hell of a special, though.
There have been some really impressive cars here today.
My new car I saw go by, and I tried chasing the owner, but in my condition, it was a lost cause. It was that 70 Coronet convertible, and it wasn't an RT. Yeah. I didn't think they existed anymore. They'd all been made into RTs.
It was the purple 500.
Yes. It's a nice, subtle car.
A six-wheeler.
Yes, you don't see those every day. We haven't seen those in Kuala Lumpur in months.
But there was a six-wheeler.
That Bob just moved in.
The six-wheeled Tyrrell.
Yes, the famous Tyrrell Formula One car, which actually won a few races.
It did run a few races until Goodyear decided they weren't going to keep developing the tires, and that sort of ran.
Didn't March show one that had two rear wheels?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I guess they had to do it differently, right?
Well, that was the time when they were experimenting. That's when the Brabham fan car debuted, which was a sort of the sequel to the Chaparral and 2J Sucker.
And the only victory for an Alfa Romeo Brabham. And afterwards, Carlo Chitti, who was the head of Alfa's powertrain development for Auto Delta, says, it was not a Brabham victory. It was an Auto Delta victory. It's like, and that's why you lost every race before and every race after, right? But
And then it was banned after one race, wasn't it?
It was banned, absolutely.
Yes, Formula One. Let's change the subject.
Yeah, let's change it. Let's go back to the drinkers.
Pontiac alert. Look at that. Poncho convertible. It's missing. It should have had headlights this year. It should have had six bloody headlights.
That's a Catalina 400 convertible, folks.
So somebody who just came from Kuala Lumpur. Hey,
what's that red thing?
The red thing is something that you may have had a hand in. It's a Mazda Miata.
We should explain to the viewers what really happened.
Everybody talks about him, okay? Just admit, I'm the uncle of the Miata, okay?
This is better looking. This is cool. Now, that's cool.
Yeah, this is a tricked-out Riviera with what looks like 30-inch wheels on it.
Yeah, those must be very practical when you hit a curb.
explain the Miata thing.
Okay. A lot of people say that Bob is the guy that actually started the Miata project at Mazda. And I don't like to think of it that way. I really don't. I mean,
you like to think that you started
I like to think that I am the uncle of the Miata.
Yeah, I don't like being called the father of the Miata, and he enjoys being called the uncle of the Miata, so I think that's fair.
Fair exchange is no robbery in this case. But I remember I was working on an electric vehicle at General Motors, and we showed it at the LA Auto Show, and I had sort of gotten Bob's face about the Miata, and I said, "Hey, did you see?" And we had a Miata being out accelerated by the electric car in the demonstration.
You wonder why that was done in the video, huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I said, "Say, Bob, did you see that? It's faster than a Miata." And do you remember what your response was?
No, I actually tried to put that out of my mind.
He said the Miata has a better exhaust note.
It's true. It does. And actually, it goes farther on a charge.
Ba-ding, ding. Okay. And another thing. Yeah. Hey, try the roast beef, folks. It's really good.
Hey, guys, four fins. The caddy.
Okay, so we got to ask the guy from Kuala Lumpur via Australia who's never been to the Dream Cruise. What's your reaction?
It's dreamy. It's really cool. Jimmy said it was the Dream Bruise. And I was wondering what the hell he was talking about, but this is great. Yeah. This is bloody great.
Yeah, baby.
Except for the cars with the ratty sounding uncorked exhaust. That's
forward,
good exhaust,
folks.
But that was
probably
ratty sounding.
It's music to my ears.
It sounds like something a little bit raspier. Raspier. No, this is good. This is definitely good.
You know, the question is, it's pretty safe to say there are going to be cars that are built now that would show up here and seem totally appropriate in 20, 25 years. I mean, a lot. So you see them here now. The GT500 performance pack. When the ZL1's out, that's another one. CTSVs look perfect here.
Especially the coupe.
Dang right. I mean, they all kind of fit.
But there's ZR1.
ZR1, definitely. And the Z06 to me is still the balanced Corvette. That's the one to me that's the sweetest of the Corvettes.
A friend of mine just got a carbon Z06, and it is absolutely gorgeous.
You get it in blue, the trick blue. Yeah. But this is one of those things where you think, what cars are going to be here in that period of time? And you have to understand that it's easy to think of those cars, but there are other cars that people that are kids now are aspiring to that are performance cars in their mind, because it's a relative bandwidth. And you think, what else would be here? I mean, will you see things like the only 8-cylinder BMW M3 ever built, one generation? Will that be a car at the Dream Cruise?
The Nissan Cube.
Whoa! Whoa, God.
My head hurts.
Yeah,
after that
I'm telling
one.
You, my forward lobes, just from that. Hey,
well, you're the one that said there's a very narrow bandwidth, and kids today, who knows?
It's a valid point, and it terrifies me.
You know, one
and
big
depressing.
Difference.
What about things that are sort of the equivalent of muscle cars now? Things like Regal GSs. Does that fit in that category? I mean, I'm asking.
I'm not sure that it does. I think there's other stuff, you know, that Jen touched on. Challengers, Mustangs, Chargers, a whole bunch of other stuff like that.
I mean, the interesting thing is you've got base Challengers, base Mustangs, and base Camaros with way more horsepower than these muscle cars. I mean, you guys mentioned it earlier. And they actually perform pretty well. They're nice cars to drive. They're a lot more balanced in some cases because they don't have as much weight over the front wheels. Do those cars have a chance of being here?
I think they do. I really do. In fact, you know, I think some of the electrics, too, the early stuff. Honest to goodness, I think the Nissan Leaf and the Chevy Volt will be here 25 years from now.
See, I understand how you can actually hop up a Volt, okay, or a Leaf, because what you do is take the motor out of the armature and rewind it like it's due to a slot car,
oh,
okay?
Yeah, epoxy.
Epoxy it. You know, and those deals suddenly have a lot of power.
Yeah, I used to kick my, you know what, with that little scale electrics you had.
Yeah, but I rewound the motor.
No, that's true. I didn't.
So, you know, you start thinking about it. Here's one. Solstice or Sky. Are they here in 20 years?
Sky especially, because it's going to be so rare.
Absolutely, yeah.
No, wait a minute. Oh, no. I have to disagree. The car that will be here will be the Daewoo G2X. That'll be the one everybody will be lusting for, because it's even rarer.
Yeah, we should explain. The Daewoo G2X is, in fact, a Saturn Sky that was rebadged for sale in Korea.
They sold, I think, 13 of them, maybe 14.
The Sky was exported. It was sold as
Opel GT.
Opel GT.
Right.
And they sold it as a Vauxhall. They also sold it as a Daewoo.
I never knew the Daewoo one.
G2X, great name, and you look at it and you go, okay. And, of course, in Korea, people went, what's this?
A black Cadillac XLR just rolled by.
Earlier today, there was a white XLR V.
A V?
And it was a V, and it was the facelift car they built for only 1 year. And I looked at that, and I thought, because that's a car, the design is so crazy on it, the proportion's so wild, it even works really well in white. But I looked at it, and I thought, yeah, you know what? I could live with one of those. They're not, they're funny cars to drive.
Yeah, but I really like the way they look, though.
They look great, and the V had an interesting engine, because it's a supercharged North Star. So all the stuff's kind of there. The problem is, if you buy one of those thinking you're getting a Corvette that's a little more sophisticated, boy, it ain't that. It's a different kind of car.
it's a different kind of car, but I like it. They're so rare, you just never see them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in California for a couple of months. I have seen two XLRs in California, for crying out loud. And I'll tell you, in the car park in Southern California, they jump out at you. They really do. It's like, wow, what the heck is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they'll be here in 25 years.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But remember, scarcity alone does not determine value. And the best example is in 1979... The Oldsmobile 442 was an appearance package on the Cutlass, and Oldsmobile built
the fastback Cutlass. We got to put this into proportion.
It was the fastback Cutlass,
the downsized fastback
679, and they built two that were specced out this way. They were Cutlass,
V8s.
They were V8 Cutlasses, all right, with a 442 package. They had a nice aluminum wheel on it. They had 5-speed BorgWarner manual transmissions and V8 diesels.
And they built two.
Now the value
for the press
of those
fleet.
The value of those cars now is probably about $26 a ton. So scarcity alone does not determine value.
No, you're right, because otherwise the Lincoln Blackwood might be a collector's item.
Well, the Blackwood.
Yeah.
But turn around the other way. You look at cars like 56, 55, 56, 57 Chevys were built in huge numbers, and they are still...
Look at that Chevy right there.
Wow. Fleet line. Listen to the lake pipes.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a good point about the 55 Chevy. Who would expect that a two-door 55 Chevrolet 210 would be worth anything, you know? So I think it's a valid point, you know. But I guess, you know, it's the thing that is going to be the defining factor on these things hanging around. It's not just a scarcity. It's a desirability. Does somebody want it? Is there anybody in the world other than me that wants a 62 Plymouth Fury? Okay?
No.
Yeah, I know that.
Which means
I'll never be in a bidding war, okay?
Well, I don't know. I'm thinking the price. I could be in there just to sort of drive the price up for you. Think you're getting a good value.
Yeah, $1,300 maybe. Yeah.
Well, okay. Two things I think drive desirability, and one is nostalgia. As a kid, you liked it, and two is design. You know, which drives everything in this business.
Design.
Yeah. But this
business will always hinge on it.
I concur, but I think John's point about the impact it had on us in our youth is monstrous, okay? I mean, you could argue the entire classification of so-called special interest automobiles, because they can't really, don't let them call them classics, right? But people want them, and they want them because it was like, you know, when you were 15 years old, you thought you started drooling, right? And I think that's a huge factor.
I hope they aren't drooling over Pacers and things like that.
Well,
but Pacers are cool because they're just so weird.
Yeah. The funny thing, though, when you talk about design itself is sort of weird because one of the best examples of a car that went through radical design changes in three product generations is the original Buick Riviera.
Yeah.
The 63, 64, 65, then the 66 through 70, yeah. And then the 71.
What the hell is this?
Just another V8 motorcycle with four wheels. Oh, excuse me. Oh.
Now that's a car.
That's a car that's rare and valuable.
The Barracuda.
And
no, that's a Hemi Cuda with California plates on it.
Yeah. Now the question is, was it originally a Hemi Cuda?
Yeah. Was it an original? Who knows? Probably not.
Who can say? But they're not original California plates.
That's right.
Because it's a 7-digit plate. That would have had the 6-digit blue tape, and it would have started with the letter B or C.
The man...
the man knows his plates.
The man who knows what? Peter, go ahead, say it.
The man who knows too much in stereo. Welcome to the land of the obscure, folks.
Now, what is the most obscure thing we could say about a car here, Bob? That's that round. Like, fast. You got to come up. It's got to be a car you see.
That's obscure.
Chevelle. Nice Saab.
Pretty nice car. And no vinyl top. No irritating vinyl top. I'll bet that wasn't really the Indy Pace car.
No, I don't mean this as a joke.
Do you think?
I don't know. I'd just be surprised.
I can tell you the obscure one.
Yeah.
And not because I like it, but that Coronet that was a convertible and a 500 and hadn't been made into an RT. It's like...
It's not obscure. That's rare.
Well, okay, yeah, fine.
Bullet Mustang, still a fantastic one, and get it in black, which was rare. You could get it in black.
Oh, the Bullet Mustang?
Yes.
Oh, I thought they were all the green.
No, you could get it in black. So
I would do Highland Green myself, you know, but the truth is, a Boss 302 in Highland Green.
Oh, the new one?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah,
would that not be a car you would sandpaper one of your eyeballs for? I mean, it's that cool. Figuratively speaking,
this
of
goes
course.
Back directly to John's comment about our youth. Jimmy and I had probably a different impact from the film Bullet than anybody else because we saw it on an American Airlines 707 at flight level 370 on Astrovision, the black and white TVs, the car chase during rough air.
Yeah.
What more could you ask for?
It was great, and it was amazing to hear the sounds of people around us going, ugh! And all the flight attendants were walking these bags back and forth in line. Now, here is one of my favorite cars, and it is immensely rare, a Ghia 450 SS.
Ladies and gentlemen,
rare automobile.
Something Jim and I agree on. It's very rare. And it's probably the best custom car, Italian body car, with a Chrysler 273 engine ever built.
Yeah, arguably.
I don't know about the argument.
No, there was one of the least attractive Corvettes ever done.
Absolutely, especially with the Tupperware bodywork that we're doing on the car.
And don't forget one other thing. If you bought it in California, you had a 305.
For 1 year. In 82, they put 305s in those cars, and they would not pull the skin off an egg custard.
No.
But you know what? It didn't hurt the desirability of Corvette. Corvette survived this awful performance
period. Cameraman. There is a twin toilet seat Cornet. That's what I had a summer job at Chrysler. And we used to call 70 Cornets twin toilet seat Cornets. That may be the one that I lust after. No, maybe not. It looks like it's got a hood bulge. And the California license plate is not on it, so I don't know if it's correct. But, yes, what a fine car.
As soon as the light turns, we'll see this car. We're looking down the road here now, looking down Woodward.
Dramatic. This is so cool, I can't believe it.
If it isn't fast, it'll be out accelerated
like
by Volkswagen
Bus. Because if there was, it'd be 5,600 protons.
There's the Trans Am.
Solid gold.
Yep, that's the 500. I want the car. Bring it back.
I wonder if they would give you the car, Bob, if you asked nicely.
Please give me the car, sir.
That would be better. Because I mean, sitting here saying,
give
I want
me your
the car.
Yeah, no, chances are that guy knows what he's got.
Yeah, I think so.
You think?
Yeah. Nah, probably.
Nice Chevy pickup.
Oh, yeah.
That was the advanced design. Is that what they called those when they brought the generation out, which is pretty cool?
Original Bronco.
Nice. Way cool.
Okay, you want a trivia question? The name Sport Utility was first coined for the Bronco pickup. They didn't call it a pickup. They called it the Bronco Sport Utility.
It not apply to the one with the station wagon. Pickup only.
Only the pickup. Now, there we go. Esoteric. But important. You know, people think that's trivia. It's not. It's significant.
Jim, it's a La Mancha.
Look at that.
Do you see the Coronet across the way?
Yeah.
In the wonderful movie, what was that? It was Wheels.
Wheels.
Arthur Haley thing made into a TV movie with Rock Hudson and...
Tony Franciosa.
They built this car called the Hawk that was made out of a javelin. They made two of them, fiberglass body going. They're kind of cool in a repulsive way. What they used for the car, maybe the company was called a La Mancha, and they were all Dodge Coronets with really weird-looking noses on them. It was all done by Kurt Brubaker, who made the Brubaker Box. Remember that?
Yes, absolutely. Brubaker Box
and was still a cool piece of design today.
Yeah,
still
absolutely.
A cool piece of design.
Yes, but he did the La Manchas.
CTSV, I can take it or I can take it. But those guys really should...
Nice Grand Prix.
No vinyl roof. Nice color.
Yep.
A good paint job. Nice. And all the body panels fit.
Yeah, very nice. Wow.
Now, where is the X400
when
we
need
it?
Look at the body kit on the Mercedes. That SLK with that...
Look at that body kit on that Mercedes
SLK. My mistake. Excuse me.
He knew what he was saying.
I've been out of the country a while.
You know, when they brought the Crossfire out, it was a coupe only. It was determined that it was the absolute best way to buy a Mercedes 320 SLK with phenomenal depreciation. Hey, a drop-down side. There we go.
Although ramp side was better.
To say old speed on it, that's kind of pushing it a little bit, isn't it?
Speed.
Do you think? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey guys, I hate to break up the party, but we're at the top of the hour here. And,
are you kidding?
Yeah.
It's time to go.
I'm afraid it is, but. People, you just had a world first here with Jim and Speer Park Schwab.
The Stereo Hall Brothers.
The Stereo Hall Brothers, right. Thanks, you guys.
Hey, thanks you, John.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
It's been awesome.
Peter, I want you to shake hands with him with a vibration. You know, I feel it.
Thanks,
Jim. Take care, John.
Okay. Good to see you, as always.
Goodbye. And careful of the glare.
So, folks, we're going to be signing off. Peter, this is cool, man.
Yeah,
this is awesome being down here.
As always, fun.
We'll be back in the studio next week, but thanks for having tuned in. And
I got to do the boilerplate. Huh?
And my boilerplate? Oh, hold on. I got to sign off officially. Oh, yeah. Don't forget that you can friend us at facebook.com/OutOfLineDetroit. You can get all kinds of updates and info. Follow us at twitter.com/OutOfLine. Get Peter's stuff at AutoExtremist.com. Follow him at Twitter.com/AutoExtremist. And check it all out, too, at Facebook.com/AutoExtremist. Don't forget you can get this program and all our programs on your iPhone, your Android, your BlackBerry. Go to Stitcher. In fact, you could be in the running to win $100 when you sign up for Stitcher, and you can go to Stitcher.com/Autoline, enter the promotion code Autoline, and you can get the app at the iTunes store, the Android store, or click on the Stitcher logo at our website. And whew, that wraps up this for me. We'll see you next week.
That's a close for the 2011 Autoline After Hours Detroit Dream Cruise Special Edition broadcast. Before we go, we'd like to thank our entire group of sponsors one more time, starting with our signature sponsor, Mopar, Authentic Performance. Bosch, Invented for Life. Bridgestone, for drivers who want the most out of their cars, it's Bridgestone or nothing. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze, get used to more. Hyundai, experience the 2012 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com. And P2R Associates, perception to reality. One last shout out to the technology that we brought you to us this evening, LiveU, Portable Uplink Solutions. Go live anywhere, anytime at www.liveu.tv. That's it. John and Peter will see you again next week from the studio. Have a great night and a great dream cruise wherever you are. I'm Jim Hall. Thanks a lot.